Hour number three, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. We're live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern, staring at Bridgestone Arena, because the Predators take on the Carolina Hurricanes this evening. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6, and everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. We hope NASCAR will be back in Nashville, in our great city, here in the near future. If we still had a race, I would say it would be under delay today because we've had a lot of rain, unfortunately, on this Tuesday. But we've always enjoyed our conversations over the years with Jamie Little, who was a pit reporter for NASCAR's coverage on Fox Sports. And she was right in the middle of things last night in Daytona for the Daytona 500. Jamie, how you doing?
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. Literally just touched down at home. I've been gone for a while.
I bet you have. And like I said, I hope one day we're talking to you about a cup race in Nashville at the fairgrounds area at the short track, but we'll leave that for another day. Last night, a lot of people, all eyes were watching. We were watching the end to that race. We've been down there. We know the lay of the land and what that race is like to cover, but you're right in the thick of things. Kind of take us through the end of the race and what was the vibe there at the track and what it's like for you. I don't know how much communication you get on what's going on, but I'll just kind of like turn it over to you.
So are you talking about like the end of the actual race or what happened after the wreck?
Well, just the end of the race. Yeah, like what happens, like the community, just everything. Just you're going to interview, you know, the driver who won, in this case Denny Hamlin, and it's very chaotic, as you know, and obviously, you probably have a lot of people talking in your ear, but what that is like when you've had a horrific crash to basically end the race.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because when you know that you have victory lanes, so we're all assigned victory lanes. So this was my turn, and I knew it was I was going to have to go out there with the winner, whoever that was going to be. So I get released from my duties on pit road with about 10 to go. And I have to get in the back of a Toyota truck, and we park down like in turn one area, right where all the fire trucks are stationed and the paramedics. So we're sitting there waiting for the end of the race, and then we drive out onto the track, and then I interview the winner on the front straight. That's how it usually goes. But last night we're sitting there, and, you know, of course, 10 laps, that's about 3 wrecks later, you know, then you've
right.
got to get your winner. So I think last year I sat there for an hour, and last night it was probably 30 to 45 minutes. So that last lap or that last half lap is always a blur for me because I'm like, okay, who's winning? You know, make sure that I've got the story on them from the day and the weekend straight, know, you know, what I need to talk to them about and get my head wrapped around it. So I don't even really see the actual finish. So last night we know that the race to the finish line, and then there was a big wreck, and I saw that Ryan Newman was upside down. And then I looked out ahead of our truck when we were sitting there, and I saw a car just up in flames. I couldn't tell who it was, what number. But the one thing I did know is that it wasn't upside down. So I thought, okay, this isn't Ryan Newman. I don't know who this is. Nothing's been said. I don't see any shot of him because obviously the concern was Ryan Newman at that point. And as we got closer to it, I see a driver hunched over. And then he sits down and he lays down on the track, and his car is just engulfed. It was Corey LaJoie. So he was down like almost in turn one. He's right next to us. So I'm about to jump out and make sure he's okay. And I see that the paramedics got him. He was walking, walked on his own power into the ambulance. So I knew he was fine. Well, at that point, we don't know what the severity of Ryan's situation is. You know, oftentimes this happens. The car flips upside down. You don't panic. You just wait because it takes time for them to get those drivers extracted. And most of the time, they're okay. They're fine. They get out. But we wait. We wait out of respect for him and just the situation. So I'm waiting there. Denny climbs out of his car on the front stretch, and my producer's in my ear saying, we don't know yet. We don't know yet. It doesn't look good right now for Ryan. Let's just wait. And then the call was, let's pass up this interview. Go straight to victory lane. So I looked at Denny when he's celebrating with his guys, and I said, I'll meet you at victory lane. And you could tell Denny's look on his face was like, oh, okay, what's going on? I know there was a wreck, but I'm not sure the severity. So I could tell then Denny was like, okay. So then we get to victory lane. Then one of the NASCAR officials comes up in my ear and said he's being transported straight to the hospital. And that always means that it's more serious because normally they would go to the infield care center and we give that update. So at that point, Denny pulls into victory lane. I'm standing there. I ran over to his window, and I just kind of whispered to him, Denny, Ryan has been sent directly to the hospital, just so you know. We don't know how bad it is, but it doesn't look good. And so he said, okay, thanks. So at that point, there's people trying to calm down his team, because keep in mind, they have no idea the severity. We see wrecks right. like this all the time. You celebrate, everybody's fine. All right, we're the winners of the Daytona 500. So at this point, there's multiple people telling the team, stop spraying Gatorade, stop yelling, stop celebrating. This is much different. We don't know the situation. So at that point, I just have to go from my gut instinct with the lining, you know, the questions, and how I want to talk to Denny and what we need to convey and the emotion. Unfortunately, I've been in this situation multiple times before, so I know how to handle it. But Denny was great. He was awesome. You know, your lining of questioning is much different than it would have been, obviously, if it was just talking about the win.
No doubt about it. And you know this because you've covered, you know, open wheel. You were in the IRL, and there's unfortunately been things like this that have actually gone worse in that sport. And things have happened in this sport, but, you know, come a long way in the last couple of decades. But, you know, the sports are dangerous. I mean, you know, this rate, driving at that rate of speed, but safety has come a long ways, as you know, and especially on the NASCAR side of things. But I said at the beginning of the show, Jamie, even when I sit there and watched it play out, you're right, we do. We see crazy wrecks and flips and stuff all the time, but usually they just come to a stop and they get out of the car. And this
Absolutely.
One just felt different, and I said it right away. I was like, that does not look good. This looks a little bit different than some of the other crazy bad wrecks we've seen in NASCAR.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing to get flipped upside down and slide down the, you know, the racetrack, but it's another when you get pierced by another car in the driver's side. Those cars are extremely safe, and you know, I always used to joke with people like, NASCAR is the safest sport I've ever covered. I mean, from IndyCar to
right.
Supercross racing to X Games. I mean, I've seen it all. I've seen death in all of them. And I came to NASCAR, and it was like the worst thing that I had seen covering it is really like a broken leg or a broken ankle or something. Thankfully, I mean, that's just a testament to how far they've come. And NASCAR takes safety so seriously that, like Denny said in Victory Lane last night, that, you know, these are moments that make you realize that we are humans, and things happen, and this is a dangerous sport, and we do take it for granted because we're so used to seeing people walk away. So a lot of heavy hearts today thinking about Ryan, and I'll just be the first to say we have no updates at this point. Obviously, we have people on the ground there at the hospital following up, and nothing has been released further on his condition. We just know that his injuries are not life-threatening, and I know Chrissy Newman is on her way there. She was not there at the time. And so I know that our Daytona 500 winner, Denny Hamlin, did go visit Ryan in the hospital this morning. So, you know, that's all positive signs.
Jamie Little is with us, NASCAR on Fox. Pit reporter all over this stuff was in Victory Lane last night at the Daytona 500. So, and this could all be speculation at this point. Do we anticipate any type of press conference from NASCAR? I know Steve O'Donnell did one last night that was very brief with the first update. But has there been any indication that there could be another one at some point today?
We don't know when. Obviously, as they're comfortable letting us know what's happening, and I'm sure once they get him more stable like they would anybody, then they can talk about more the extent of the injuries. And Roush Fenway, his team, just released a statement thanking everybody for thoughts and prayers, and that they were going to keep us updated, and they would have an update with you know, with more detail when they have it available. So at this point, it's just kind of wait and hope that we continue to get positive news out of this.
Well, and the hard part, too, is with the race delayed a day, you know, NASCAR going out west, they changed the schedule that they don't go to Atlanta in week two. They now go straight to Las Vegas. A lot of these teams were having to get ready to leave this morning from Charlotte to get out to Vegas and get ready for this weekend. And, you know, obviously there's a lot that goes into that. So that has to add, you know, to some of this, that making it so difficult to get ready to go west.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the teams, that was their big concern. I mean, I walked up in Hollers yesterday to talk to crew chiefs before we restarted the 500, and they were working on their Vegas notes, because this is when they would normally be doing it, was yesterday after Daytona. They get right on their notes and set up sheets for Vegas. And, you know, in Vegas, they always have that hauler parade down the strip. Well, they had to cancel it, and they pushed the opening of the garage till Friday morning to help these guys out. So most teams will be getting on the road about now, later this afternoon, this evening, but it puts them behind a little bit. And then you think about Roush Fenway. I mean, they have a car, a team, points they have to think about. They need to put somebody in that car. So who do they go find to fill in for Ryan Newman? And you have to think about the seat and just the setup inside the car to make that driver comfortable and able to drive. So, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, who they will go with in that situation.
Switching gears to more of a positive note, Denny Hamlin wins back-to-back Daytona 500s. It's his third Daytona 500 win in the last 5 years. And I think those that, you know, cover the sport and been around the sport, watch the sport, know what kind of driver Denny Hamlin is. But what does this do in your mind, Jamie, for his legacy now that he is in very, very rare company, being a three-time Daytona 500 winner?
He really is. I mean, that guy is phenomenal. I mean, he's such a great driver anyway, but almost any track we go to, you can say Denny Hamlin's going to be a threat. But when it comes to these plate races, and Daytona specifically, he just has it figured out. And as you guys know, it just seems like over history, there's like a driver or two drivers that will just figure it out in that era. And you know that every time we go there, they're going to be a threat. They just, it's like with Dale Sr., they used to say he could see the air. It's like Joey Logano has that. Dale Earnhardt Jr. had that. And Denny has that. And it's, you can't really explain it. You know, Denny said last night in Victory Lane that he's a student of it. He never stops learning. He always watches and learns how he can be better in those situations. And it's all about patience, skill, ability, bravery. You know, that's a big thing, is being brave enough to know those moments that you have to go for it. And we saw Denny on that last lap go for it. He threads the needle. He sets somebody else up. He pushes them like he's going to push them across the line. And then, boom, he's there to get the second closest finish in Daytona 500 history.
Jamie, you know, it's hard to tell on a plate race, you know, when you're evaluating drivers of, okay, who's going to be the one to beat, or the rookies. But there are several rookies on the NASCAR circuit this year. Christopher Bell, you know, is one of those coming out of the Xfinity Series after a tremendous career there. What were some of your takeaways for the young guys going around the high banks of Daytona?
Yeah, Christopher Bell was really impressive yesterday. I mean, he ran up there in the top 10 most of the race. I mean, I thought he was going to end up with the top three. Heck, he had a shot at winning it with just a handful of laps to go. I was very impressed. It is not easy for rookies to step into that role. And John Hunter Nemechek, he's in the top 10. I mean, that's, everybody said, well, it's a crapshoot at Daytona. It's easy for people to finish in the top 10 that don't normally. But it takes skill and patience. And when you're a rookie, you don't have many friends on that racetrack, and you need friends to run in the draft. So I was very impressed with John Hunter. I thought that was impressive. Tyler Reddick was there. You know, unfortunately, we see a lot of wrecks, and a lot of them got caught up in it. But we have quite the stacked rookie field this year. I'm really excited about moving forward, seeing how Cole Custer and Tyler Reddick and Christopher Bell and John Hunter all do and compete against each other. It's going to be fun to watch.
Jamie, I want to ask just one question about maybe from a casual fan's angle. And I heard just in a lot of the coverage last night on the sports shows talking about, you know, the drivers, I think, use the term roulette when you play when you're in the restrictor plate racing and you know it's just a matter of time, there's going to be wrecks. And I noticed the last couple of times I've watched, in the last few laps, when everybody's got to make the move, as you said, it's time, you have to do it. That urgency's there. It's your last chance. That it seems like it's hard to finish the race without a handful, maybe a lot of caution flags. How does everybody who puts the race together feel about that? Is there any way to avoid that? I know safety has got to be a concern, but the drivers are so competitive, it feels like you almost can't avoid it.
It's like you can't avoid it. I mean, the fans, you know, complained and yelled, and everybody wanted to see races end under green, not under caution, and that's why we have overtime. Well, now that we have overtime, we seem to see, we've always had wrecks at the end, but it's just, as they say, caution, free caution. And I think as you have attempt after attempt, that urgency just keeps getting even more. And guys are making moves that maybe they shouldn't be making at the time. Or, you know, they're desperate. There's guys driving for a ride. There's all different agendas. But those that come out, no matter what, it's like Denny Hamlin. somehow, how many, I would love to see a stat over the past 5 years or since he won his first Daytona 500, how many wrecks he's actually driven through and avoided at the end of those races. It's unbelievable.
Yep. Jamie, thanks for a clean, safe interview. When the awards banquet came through here and we were doing our show live at the Music City Center, our beautiful convention center right across the street from where we are right now, we're looking at it. When Clint Bowyer sat down with us, we weren't sure we were ever going to be back on the air again. So we're glad we still have a show. And it just felt a lot safer today talking to you than Clint.
That's how I feel every time I interview like that. Like, all right, tune in. You don't know what you're going to see.
That's a special man right
but
there.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, you just wind him up and let him go and pray for the best.
Hey, my bosses are geniuses. They just signed Bowyer to be part of our broadcast team, so you're going to be seeing a lot more of him during the Xfinity races. He does a tremendous job, but he is just hilarious. He's must-watch TV.
He did it on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
He did a great job. Really good insight. He's funny as heck. Just the way that he delivers. He's come a long way with the TV stuff. You know, it's hard for him to keep his focus for more than 5 minutes. So for him to sit in a booth that long, I was really impressed.
Oh, is it 5 minutes? I thought it was 5 seconds. Okay, so that's good. He is working on things. Jamie, always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this. And like I said at the beginning, I really, really hope someday we're talking to you about the Cup race that's coming through Nashville here in the near future.
Me too. I really miss racing there. I covered the Xfinity series out of the Nashville Motor Speedway for a long time, and I loved going there. It's one of my favorite towns. I'm a country music junkie. I love the people, and I think NASCAR belongs there.
We agree. Jamie, thanks for doing this. Always good to talk to you, and have fun in Vegas.
Thank you very much. Anytime, guys.
All right, that is Jamie Little, NASCAR on Fox. She was the pit reporter. She was the first one to interview Denny Hamlin when he climbed out of the car as the Daytona 500 winner. What, 3 times now? Is that right? 3 times?
Yeah.
Gosh, that is such a crapshoot race.
I know.
To already win it 3 times at Denny's age.
Well, he's won it 3 times in 5 years.
It's impressive.
Back-to-back, because you won last year.
All right, we will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Scott Burnside coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll talk to him about some of the moves that have already been made and what's to come 6 days out from the trading deadline in the National Hockey League. We had David Poyle join us last hour. We just spoke with Jamie Little, NASCAR on Fox. And it's pretty interesting to see. Of course, you know, they wanted their race to be on Sunday. It got rained out. One, I was impressed with the crowd that came back, that followed and came back on Monday. I thought it would affect it immensely.
Because it was a sellout for Sunday.
It looked good
yesterday.
And you know what? The end, she said it perfectly. The end to Daytona 500, especially, you know, it's the first race of the year, it's the biggest, and there's just a lot of eyes on it, and everybody wants to win it. It feels like the end of a basketball game when the coaches have all their timeouts left, right?
Yeah.
I just feel like there's about 6 timeouts, and the final minute and a half of a basketball game take about 25 minutes. That's what the end of the Daytona 500 feels like.
Well, here's what's funny. So I'm sitting there watching the race. And I'm on Twitter, and so we are, you know, I'm tweeting, just giving my thoughts, I'm tweeting at people, and you know this was a big deal for me. So I asked a question to Dale Earnhardt Jr., and he responded. So there was like a thread with Dale Jr. that he had responded to, and I made
What was your question, Dale?
I said, what is going through your mind as a driver with 30 to go? Because at that point, there was 30 to go. And I've always heard 30 to go was when – that's when you go to work. That's when you start to see what you have. You see how, you know, Dale Jr. and Dale Sr. used to do this, that they would go all the way to the back, and then they would see how long it would take them to get back up to the front and to see what they had left in the car. And so his response was great. It was a gif of Philip Rivers doing, you know, waving. And it's like, everybody follow me. So – That's how he went about it. But then he also said, but they're not, you know, the big one hasn't happened yet. And I said, look, there's going to be at least 4 wrecks before this thing is over. And there were, I think there were 5, there were more. So it just that's when you start pushing it. You know, Joey Logano got way too aggressive and caused the first big one. And, you know, Newman was in a great position. I thought he was going to win it. And he's won this before. He won about 10 years ago, I think it was. So I thought that Newman was in a great position because on the last restart, he wasn't in the lead. He was behind. And generally, you want to be behind the leader. You don't want to be in the lead going to the final restart. And then he makes the move, and Blaney tries to get, you know, make the move and gets into him, and we saw what happened. But
I don't know. Blaney was getting pushed by
Blaney was getting
Hamlin.
Pushed. Yeah, Hamlin was pushing. Hamlin was trying to set up the slingshot, and then Blaney got into Newman. But it just that's plate racing.
How do you guys differentiate? Because I Darren, that's the number one thing that I've. Noticed, and I'm a casual fan. I'm not going to watch every race, but I like watching the end of the race and seeing the excitement, the drama of the last few laps. But it is definitely frustrating from my perspective that, hey, you know, like you said, it takes long. You don't know when it's going to end, and you want to see it build to the big finish. So when a wreck happens, like you use the term, Chase, too aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how often do drivers privately say, you know what, come on, man, that was out of line, as opposed to they're just being competitive. They're trying to win and because there's a fine line.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, it's just hard to watch when you can't run two laps before here comes the caution flag again.
Well,
and worst case scenario, you know, we almost had the worst case scenario yesterday.
Sure.
Right? We're very fortunate that there wasn't anything worse that happened
to
Ryan Newman.
Yeah, so – that's the hard part because you don't know where the line is, and you have
and the people are going to push and bend and
40
test
guys.
That line.
You have 40 guys out there, and you know while you have guys drop out of the race, most of the time towards the end, you know you probably have 20 or more cars that still have a shot to win it, and so they're all trying to go. You have the leader that's throwing the block that you know is trying not. You know you're having to jump back and forth between the top line and the bottom line, and keep those guys from getting a run, and so it just there's such a fine line in a close margin of error that they can make, and you know just one little they don't even have to touch each other. It's just moving the air, so you know a car could try and dive to the inside, and it just takes the air off the back end of another car, and all of a sudden they're spinning around. So it's and Joey Logano was pushing really hard there at the end, trying to. You know, get a run, and that ended up causing a wreck, and then he got caught in another one, and ultimately was taken out of it. So
I mean, just think about what they're doing. They're pushing another car at 200 miles per hour.
Yeah. You know it's going to happen.
And they
that's
by
what
the way,
that's what the drivers
I don't
use.
Care
it's
how
roulette.
Good you are. Just
it's
think
roulette.
About how yep. insane that is to say.
So that's what Kurt Busch said. It's roulette.
Is it ever going to get better, or is there a better way to do this?
Well, took.
If everybody backs off, you're not going to have exciting finishes.
Right,
right.
It's inevitable, right?
Last year, they took horsepower away, and they did that across the board, not just at Daytona. So they took horsepower away, and the drivers hated it because they couldn't. And there were certain things they just couldn't do. Like it was just they didn't have the horses, and so they put 100 horsepower back in them this year, and this is what we saw. You saw the Busch clash. I mean, they couldn't. Stop wrecking. They couldn't stop wrecking in the 500. And so, I mean, drivers are drivers. They want speed, but there's just – it's figuring out, okay, what's going to make them happy and put on a good show, because that's ultimately what they're trying to do is put on the show. The drivers are the ones that have to drive the cars, so they want to be happy. But then you got to be safe at the same time.
Have you guys ever gone to a go-kart track?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Pigeon Forge, it's down at the beach, or, you know, they have them here in town. They have go-kart tracks, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're up, you get in these cars and there's I don't know how many out on the track. I don't know about you, but I'm trying to. You want to win, right?
Right.
You want to try to win.
You
want to pass as many people as you can. If you've ever done that, you're not just out there going, "Wee, this is fun," you know, like you actually want to try to compete against people. When you have the fast go kart. It's fun, right? Like you, when you can actually get to people. But have you ever gotten into the one and you're just like, it's a dud?
Yeah.
You know it's a dud.
You're getting caught by everybody. Yeah.
Because you can't do it. You're mashing it, and there's nothing you can do.
You're just on the dud. Yeah. You're
like,
I'm trying to stick it through the floorboard.
Right.
Because I'm trying to mash it so hard. And you just can't. Like, that is the worst feeling.
Yeah, it's
like
awful.
You're like, this sucks. Like, I can't do anything. Like, I'm not going to be able to get – everybody's going to catch me. Everybody's catching me. I can't do anything. I can't get around. But when you have that fast one,
oh yeah,
how much more fun it is.
Sure.
When you're beating and banging, you're trying to maneuver and try to go to the left, go to the right, and you can actually make moves with the fast go-kart, and there's other fast go-karts around you. But when you have that slow one or that dud, and I don't know why one's a dud – and one's faster. I don't know. I mean, they're gas-powered go-karts. I don't know why one stinks and one's a whole lot more fun. But when you get in that dud, it's the worst. Like, you're like, what a wasted opportunity. Like, I'm just out here. I just can't wait for this to end because I'm going to get no enjoyment out of this ride.
So
like, I need to go do it again and try to get a better car.
I went to the GoPro Motorplex in Charlotte. It's just outside of Charlotte, and a lot of like NASCAR drivers go there because it's a road course, and they go there a lot, and they've trained there and go there for fun. And you have to sign waivers, and you wear a fire suit, and you put on helmet and everything. I mean, they go fast.
Yeah, that's a different ride. I'm talking about the ones.
No, I know.
You know,
but I did that and a few years ago, and you do. I mean, you go pretty fast, and I got in one that just there was a miss or something, and so we got done with the first race, and I stand up, and the guy working there is like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "This one sucks. I want another one." And they looked at it like the spark plug. There was something wrong with it. Mm. But you could tell a difference. And then I've been to the tracks like you're talking about where you just don't have a good one, and you're just mashing it and trying to.
It's the worst.
Look, they have the speed park in Gatlinburg, and they have an oval that you can run on and go pretty fast.
Well, they have a lot in Pigeon Forge.
Yeah, yeah, but there's a NASCAR one. That is the oval.
Yeah,
so have I. And I've gotten black flagged on that one before for being too aggressive.
I've been told the same thing.
A little too aggressive.
But when that's because you had a good
I had a good car.
When you have a bad one, it's just the worst experience. You're like, man, I just want to get my money back, or I got to do it again because I don't want to end on this note because this was horrible.
I got parked one time because I was
I've never
there.
Been parked.
Well, it was all family members, and I wrecked my uncle.
I've been yelled at.
No, yeah.
But I haven't been parked.
No, I got parked. I wrecked my uncle. I spun him out, and they were like, all right, Earnhardt, get in here. That's what they call
So you got parked.
I got parked. Wow. I was told to get out.
Yesterday, Derrick Henry went on Bussin' with the Boys, and that should make a lot of people nervous because you never know what's going to happen on Bussin' with the Boys. We're going to tell you what Derrick Henry said, and we'll discuss it on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Derrick Henry, interesting offseason. We've talked about it with the Titans. He was on Bussin' with the Boys yesterday. And it was brought up, the Rich Eisen interview we've talked about, discussed. This is an offseason where John Robinson's going to have to make tough decisions, especially when it comes to his stud running back and his quarterback. Here's what Derrick Henry had to say.
So basically I misunderstood what Rich said.
Yeah.
I was basically agreeing to, Zeke is a floor as far as I was to my understanding that Zeke is a floor, him being the highest paid. It's
yeah.
like he's the peak of where running backs, want to be at as far right. as like getting paid. So that was my understanding of him saying like Zeke is the floor. So I basically was agreeing to
you were saying,
what
like,
you're saying.
Like Zeke has the floor. Like
yeah,
he's
yeah.
he's got
yeah.
the dance.
So Zeke
and
is
Rich
the floor.
Was,
yeah. I was saying like, yeah, Zeke is the floor. Like he got it. Like that's
yeah.
yeah that's where that's where each
like Zeke
running
is
back
an
is,
example.
Yeah, yeah. That's where running back's trying to get to, where he's at. Like I said in every other interview is I'll get my agent, he will handle all the contract negotiations. Mm. That's his job. He's been doing it for a long time and we'll see where it goes as far as
polished.
The Titans and trying to get this thing figured out.
I don't know about you guys. I'm more confused than I was the first go around.
I'm
thoroughly confused by Ezekiel Elliott is the floor.
Well,
I thought the ceiling, to steal, you said it best. We were kind of laughing during the break. because we knew what he said. I'm going to steal your line, Willie, but I'm going to give you credit.
It's actually Michael Jordan's, but.
Well, yeah, but he's bringing it up. The ceiling is the floor. I mean.
No, the ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the roof, excuse me. See, and I butchered it. I should have let you do it.
Well, here's the point.
Ezekiel Elliott is not the floor.
No, he's not the floor.
He's the ceiling.
Here's what happens a lot, okay? And I had a baseball coach at Vanderbilt who was famous for this, and we would all write down some of the things. You knew what he meant, right? Casey Stengel, one of the greatest managers of all time, was famous for this. Yogi Berra, yeah. Right? You know what he meant, but the way it comes out, it's not right. You know, it a lot of times it makes you laugh. But I think, as you heard Derrick Henry, he was like, I was agreeing with Rich Eisen, but I think he interpreted that as Ezekiel Elliott sets the bar. That would make him the ceiling, right?
Not
so Ezekiel Elliott is the ceiling, not the floor. And I think that's what Derrick Henry was trying to say. Ezekiel Elliott is the guy that sets the standard. He is the top running back, as he explained himself there. But the terminology he's using is wrong. It's the opposite.
Right.
When he says the floor, he means the ceiling.
Right.
Or
the roof.
Or the roof.
Now, don't ask me what Michael Jordan meant was the ceiling was the roof.
I don't think we really know what Michael Jordan meant. But
right.
But it's Michael Jordan.
I think what Michael Jordan was trying to say at the time was the sky is the limit.
Right.
Right? That's the right phrase.
Germans?
Not the ceiling is
Germans?
The Germans bomb Pearl Harbor.
Let him go.
Exactly.
Let him go.
We could do an entire show of... You know, you take two sayings and you put them together and they mean something different. You know what the guy meant, but it was really funny how it came out. There's all kinds of that. I think that's just a little confusion of the terminology.
The first time I heard it, I'm like, what in the hell are they talking about? What?
Yeah.
What are they discussing? Ezekiel Elliott is the floor. No, he's not the floor. This, to me, and I don't know. Once again, I was confused. And I tried to say this several times when we would bring up the Rich Eisen, when people are like, Derrick Henry said, no, Derrick Henry didn't say anything. Rich Eisen did.
Right.
Rich Eisen is the one that was basically saying it, and Derrick Henry was just going, yeah, yeah, you know, I want to be. So I'm trying to interpret all this stuff. I'm just basically trying to read between the lines because this is now twice I've heard Derrick Henry talk about it, and I scratch my head and I'm confused on what he's saying. What does he want? I guess... From what we know of his makeup and how he is, he's a team guy. He's not a me guy. He's a team guy, which is great. That he's just saying every running back wants to get where Ezekiel Elliott is. Doesn't mean I got to be there. But, yes, when you ask a running back, is Ezekiel Elliott your standard?
Yes.
One, he's the top running. You know, he's one of the top running backs in the league. Everybody knows that. And he's been paid such. So, yes, he wants to be like that. That doesn't mean he's going to be or will be or has to be. But, sure, I'm a running back. I was the leading rusher in the league. I would like to be where Ezekiel Elliott is contract-wise.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear.
Is that somewhere?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's spot on.
I think it's pretty clear. He is acknowledging that Ezekiel Elliott has set the bar. And
that's
that
probably
is a lot
what
different
he meant to
than
say.
That's exactly what he meant to say.
Yeah.
He thought Rich Eisen was saying that he wasn't listening close enough, use a different term. But
yeah.
I think that's the clarification I got, that Ezekiel Elliott is rightfully so the highest paid running back, and I want to find my place in there, not necessarily try to beat that. When you say he's the floor, that means I'm not taking anything less than what Ezekiel has got, and that's clearly not his mindset.
Now, I think that Derrick Henry, I think the guaranteed money could be part of the conversation of, you know, does Derrick Henry have more of whatever contract he's going to get guaranteed than that of Ezekiel Elliott? That, you know, that's a different thing to look at. But, yeah, I think he met the bar. You know, that Zeke set the bar and Derrick wants to find himself somewhere around there. With all that said, I think the team guy thing is something to pay attention to. That he wants to get paid and he knows this is his one shot at a big contract as a running back in this league, but he's also made it pretty clear that he wants it to be with the Tennessee Titans, that he doesn't want to go anywhere. So he said all the right things from standpoint.
What is that based on?
He said it.
He has?
Yes. He's been asked, you know, is Tennessee where you want to be? He goes, yeah, I want to
be
with the Titans.
Yeah, I guess in the Rich Eisen. Yeah, but once again, it's like, well, what else? Of course he's going to say that. It's like.
But look, if you're with your they all have people.
It's like a guy going to be at the combine. Would you mind being drafted by us? No, I'd be great. I'd love to play for you guys. Well, what the heck do you want him to say?
But
right?
No, they should pass.
I hope you guys don't take me. Yeah. I really don't want to play for you guys. I'd rather go to it did, but
we're for John Elway.
It's tricky.
Right. They all have people, though. All these players have people. And the people, if they have the right ones, the right PR people, are going to tell him how to word things. So if he really did want to play hardball or go somewhere else, I mean, there's a way you can word it. You can answer those questions. Like, I've loved my time in Tennessee, but, you know, I got a great opportunity to see what's available to me, you know, as a free agent. You know, I can see what could come my way.
Yeah, but you don't want to say, I've loved my time in Tennessee, because it's almost sounding like you're saying past tense. Oh, immediately go, oh, so you're leaving?
Right, but you've heard players say things like that.
Well, that's
before.
Right, and that's not a good idea.
Well?
Just say, you could say, I've enjoyed the 4 years here. I've had a blast.
Right.
And I hope that everything gets worked out. That is the goal. And I want to be here long term. Of course, you know, I want to get paid too, but I want everything to work out here. If
sure.
it doesn't, I hope that's not the case, but right. I'll have to
I'm in a good position.
I'll have to take on that subject matter if that's where it gets. But my focus is trying to keep everything intact here in Nashville with the Titans.
The bottom line is, it doesn't matter what he says right now, because anything that Derrick Henry or any free agent for that matter says, we're going to dissect, because that's what we do. I mean, that's just a part of this position. That's a part of this time of year, that he is a highly touted free agent. He's still the property of the Titans, so they have some time to get it done, but it doesn't matter. He could say, I hate the Titans, or I love the Titans, or I don't care, or it doesn't matter. We're going to put it under a microscope and go, oh, what did he mean?
Well, here's really the key question is, how would you react if they slapped the franchise tag or the transition tag?
That's what I want to know. That's the question.
And I'm not sure I would answer that question right now if I'm Derrick Henry. I'd rather just sort of avoid that.
Because here's the thing.
See where it goes first.
Yeah.
Then.
Right. Look, he loves the Titans. The Titans love him. They want to get back together, but it's still a negotiation. John Robinson has to do his job, and Derrick Henry's agents have to do their job.
There are running backs who, either through their agent or themselves, say, you know what? You better not slap that franchise tag on me, or else I am not showing up. I'll just tell you right now, I'm not showing up. There are people that have done that, right?
Yeah.
And it usually doesn't end well for either side.
Well, didn't Le'Veon Bell say it and did not show up, or was that after that?
I believe he is in that category, yeah.
Yeah. So, look.
And he's not the only one.
And he didn't show up.
Yeah, I'm not talking just running backs. There's a lot of players that say, yep, okay. Put the tag on me, but I won't be there.
Right.
Until we have a deal. A real deal. A long-term deal.
The
so
real
that's
deal?
That's really...
Like James Neal?
James Neal is the real deal.
He is the real deal.
All right. With that being said...
But, you know, we hope they avoid this. We can have all this fun talk and try to interpret and everything, but that's the real question.
Yeah.
Can they come up with a deal before they have to slap the franchise tag on? And when they slap that tag on, can they come to a deal before he starts having to play the game of, well, we got OTAs this week. Nope, not going.
Right.
Well, the next one is a mini camp. Well, I'm not going. And then the training camp rolls around, and it's kind of like, all right, are you really going to take this the next step? Yep, I'm not going.
Can't imagine that we're going to be having that discussion, but
I hope
you also never know.
You never know.
You know who else is the real deal? Lee Company.
Oh, tell us about it, Willie.
Well, why don't I just do that? Okay.
That was good.
Six of the next seven Predator games are at home, and as you saw, I still have the visual of Chase sliding into the boards right by the Lee Company sign on the outdoor rink on Hockey Day in America. That was big. That was great marketing for Lee Company when you get down to it. So, Chase, thanks for that. When you come into the building, you'll see the Lee Company display as well. They're a big sponsor of the Nashville Predators. They do an outstanding job, including on our radio coverage hosted by Darren McFarland tonight at 6 o'clock. So check out all the things they have to offer, including the home maintenance plan that I tell you about, and also general maintenance or home renovation. As we get into the spring months, sometimes that's the time maybe you're looking to build a patio, a deck, or maybe even a bathroom or a kitchen you want to upgrade. They have a home renovation department at Lee Company, and they'll do an outstanding job for you. Here's how you get in touch with them. 615-567-1000. That's 615-567-1000. Or go online at leecompany.com and get the ball rolling. Lee Company, proud sponsor of Nashville Predators. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Darren Donick and Chase rolling right along here from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes coming up tonight. You know, you will not want to miss tomorrow. We brought this up earlier, but we have an addition. Smashville Live, featuring special Preds players player guests, and Austin Watson and Craig Smith. They will join Hal Gill and yours truly at the Cool Springs Brew House South, located at 1855 Galleria Boulevard. The show starts at 7. A limited number of autographs or pictures will be available, so be sure to get there early. Tomorrow night, Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Yeehaw Brewing Company, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you at Pete and Terry's Tavern. As a little Preds action tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes, but we've been talking a lot about Derrick Henry and what he's going to do and his comments on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast.
I was just reading something. We're going to come back to that in just a second. We've talked a lot about, one, Drew Brees coming back to the Saints, but Teddy Bridgewater is expected to have a strong market in free agency. And they're saying, there's reports out there, in fact, Jeremy Fowler from ESPN has said he could possibly land a multi-year deal that would pay him around $30 million per. Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, you know what, though? Good for him. Just his story and the injury and coming back from that. And I think he can definitely go be a starter. I don't think anybody doubts that, especially when he filled in for Drew Brees when Brees was hurt with the Saints. I mean, he kept that ship more than afloat. So I think a team, you know, will definitely look at him. And if not for Ryan Tannehill, I think he would have definitely been a fit for the Titans at quarterback, replacing Marcus Mariota. But it all worked out with Ryan Tannehill. Now they got to get him re-signed. But, look, there are going to be teams – needing a, I mean, could he fit in L.A.? Could you see him with the Chargers? Colts?
Sure. Well, I mean, they need a quarterback. Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
If Tom leaves, Patriots?
By the way, I keep seeing more and more people starting to speculate Phillip Rivers to the Colts.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
I just feel like more and more people keep saying that. And
I could see it.
I could totally
indoor,
see it.
Indoor stadium. Yeah, you know,
makes
good
sense
team,
to me.
Frank Reich,
it's a good team. Frank Reich, him and have and Frank Reich have a little bit of a history. I don't know. It is going to be a very, very interesting NFL offseason for sure. Derrick Henry, what do you think is going to be the first move by the Titans? What will be John Robinson? I mean, no, don't tell me
Anthony Firkser.
Yeah, don't say Anthony Firkser because we know that's already happened.
Well, yeah.
of the big names, the big ones that we're talking about, the big four. How about the big four?
There you go.
Tannehill, Henry, Conklin, Ryan. Who's first?
I think.
Or it doesn't even have to be who's first. It's what's the first? Who gets the first
what's on
piece of news? Whether it's somebody leaving
yeah,
or staying, who makes the headlines first?
I think the first piece of news are – because we've seen it around the league, will be some cuts. So whether that's Delanie Walker or Cam Wake, maybe somebody else, you know, I don't see them cutting. Butler. I don't see them cutting him because I think it was like $6 million they could save, but you know the dead cap would cost him a little.
I don't know. I'm not ruling that out. I think that's a possibility
but
that they would like
that,
to avoid if they can. But
I think if you do that, you have to then bring back Logan Ryan. I mean, you don't want to lose
well,
them
both. I think that would be the scenario.
Yeah.
Let me throw it at you guys. If it meant cutting Malcolm Butler to keep Logan Ryan, would you make that move? In other words, you have to choose between one or two, and you will take a little hit on your salary cap.
I would do it.
You would have to eat some money to cut Malcolm Butler. Would that be worth bringing Logan Ryan back?
It's an interesting scenario you bring up. I would probably lean toward yes.
I do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I just think you'd get
more
out of Logan
Butler,
Ryan.
Before he got hurt, was starting to carve out and be a solid player. Logan Ryan, though,
I
think he settled in. By the end of his first year, he was better.
You know more on a consistent basis what you have from Logan Ryan.
I think Logan Ryan proved to be one of the most valuable players on the defense. So it's not really about Malcolm Butler not being what you hoped he would be. He got off to a rough start. I think he was the first to say that. But he was, you know, you were getting production from him. It's just that Ryan was so valuable. So I do think that that scenario could be in play.
So these are the next big dates that we have to remember. Obviously, the combine opens on the 24th, but February 25th is the first day for clubs to be able to franchise or transition tag players. So that's something to keep in mind. March 10th.
So you have the hockey trade deadline on the 24th and then that day on the 25th. That'll be an interesting week.
March 10th is the deadline to franchise or transition tag players. And then March 16th, that's when we get the legal tampering period. So
the legal tampering? Is that what they don't call it that, do they?
Well, basically. That's what a lot of people refer to it as, the legal tampering period.
Legal tampering.
That's what it
is. Legal burglary.
You can talk. You can't sign anybody to a contract, but you can talk. So those are things to keep in mind. Now, as for the Titans, you know, I don't know when roster bonuses are due. You know, some guys have roster bonuses that are coming up, and so you have to figure that out. Because I think Delanie Walker is one of those guys. So you tend to make cuts before you have to pay out money. So I think that's going to be the first thing that happens. As for the Big Four, to answer your original question, I think it'll be franchise tagging Ryan Tannehill.
Hmm.
That's what I think.
Really?
Yep.
That's what I would do, but you think John Robinson's going to do that right out of the gates, huh?
I think before that March 10th.
Is that
10th,
to buy time or to keep it that way?
It could be to keep it that way.
Well, I'm asking you your opinion. Is that to buy time or is that to keep it that way?
I think to keep it that way. I think they have a 1 year do it again. Hmm. And I don't think it happens like on February 25th, but I think before that March 10th, 3 p.m. Central Time deadline, it happens.
The Eagles are releasing veteran linebacker Nigel Bradham. And in 2018, he signed a 5-year, $40 million deal. Wow, already being cut. 5-year, $40 million deal in 2018.
Yeah, that's something.
Canucks GM Jim Benning is currently talking to the media right now and saying there's a chance Brock Besser could be done for the year.
Yeah, wow. He's going to miss quite a bit of time.
Well, there's one reason why they gave up so much to get Toffoli.
Well, that's why he's kind of bringing that
up.
I
didn't think it was that serious. When they said that the Predators were up in Vancouver when that injury happened on the same night that Nashville was playing in Edmonton, and their initial announcement was he was going to miss at least the next two games. And so you're thinking, well, how bad could that, you know, all right, maybe it's a little longer than that. But going from that to he might miss the rest of the season, that's pretty severe.
No doubt about it. We will come back, start the fourth and final hour with Scott Burnside. We do that next.